23. The evidence of overall coordination between the communist governments and parties. Coordination within the bloc. The revival after 1958 of an overt central body analogous to the Comintern or Cominform to coordinate the communist bloc and movement would have been incompatible with the long-range policy and strategy. There is, however, significant inside and open information on the strengthening since 1959 of the coordinating machinery of the bloc. The establishment in 1959 of a secret coordinating center for the bloc's intelligence and security services has been described already. In addition, as Khrushchev put it in October 1961, it had become the practice to hold periodic exchanges of views among the heads of parties and governments on major economic and political problems. The collective agencies of the socialist states, the Warsaw Treaty Organization, and the Council for Mutual Economic Aid have grown stronger. When the Political Consultative Committee of the Warsaw Pact was activated at about this time. In 1969, a Committee of Ministers of Defense was added, and in 1976, a Committee of Foreign Ministers. In Comecon, a Permanent Executive Committee was established at the Vice Premier level in 1963. No less important than this supranational and governmental coordinating machinery is the wide range of multilateral and bilateral forms of contact at different levels between the leaders of the bloc and non-bloc parties and their party apparatuses. A systematic reading of official communist sources, especially the Great Soviet Encyclopedia, shows the scope and scale of both governmental and party contacts. All of these provide opportunities for the communist leaders and their experts in various fields to exchange information, opinions, and accounts of their experiences in implementing the policy and strategy, and to discuss and decide on new initiatives and tactics. The possibility that, in addition to these acknowledged forms of contact, there is a secret policy coordinating center for the bloc is discussed below. Before considering the main open forms of coordination, attention should be drawn to a general point made in the encyclopedia regarding various forms of contact. According to this source, the 22nd CPSU Congress in October 1961 determined the most appropriate forms of contact between parties in present conditions. Tu Chou En-lai was present at this Congress. If his ostentatious walkout is discounted as part of a disinformation operation, the implication is that the Chinese took part in determining what form future contacts between parties should take. In the following year, the encyclopedia stated that in modern conditions, the cooperation of communist parties finds expression in bilateral and multilateral contacts. In meetings between party leaders and in the participation of communist party delegations in the work of party congresses. 3. The recognition by the encyclopedia of bilateral forms of contact as well as attendance at congresses is significant in that it legitimizes the continuation of bilateral contacts with the Chinese by the Soviets and others after the Chinese withdrawal from multilateral bloc organizations. Elsewhere, the encyclopedia emphasized the importance of conferences for the working out of agreements on joint actions for the implementation of the general line of policy. Use of the expression general line of policy is as near as the encyclopedia gets to an admission of the existence of a common long-range policy. Summit meetings. In May 1958, the first of a series of summits of first secretaries of the bloc parties and heads of the bloc governments devoted to the economic integration of the European communist countries was held in Moscow. The summits on the same subject in 1961, 1962, and 1963 were held under Comecon auspices. The Moscow summit of August 1961, which dealt with the conclusion of the German treaty, was in the form of a meeting of the Political Consultative Committee of the Warsaw Pact. It subsequently became normal, but not invariable, practice to hold meetings of the Political Consultative Committee at or near first secretary level. For example, the Soviet delegation to the meeting of the committee in January 1965 included Brezhnev, Kosygin, Gromyko, Malinovsky, and Andropov. It dealt with the subject of security in Europe and discussed the convening of a European Conference on Security and a World Conference on Disarmament. 4. The meeting of July 1966, held in Bucharest, was at summit level. It pursued the subject of security in Europe and called for troop withdrawals and the dissolution of NATO and the Warsaw Pact. 5. Subsequent meetings at summit level included those held in Sofia, March 1968, which issued a declaration on Vietnam. In the Soviet Union, August 1970, in Prague, January 1972, in Warsaw, April 1974, and in Moscow, November 1978. Point six, the 1970 summit in Moscow was attended by a particularly strong Romanian delegation, including Ceausescu, Maurer, Niculescu Mizil, and Minescu. Those in Prague and Warsaw discussed European problems. The encyclopedia noted that in 1970 the question of raising the level of effectiveness of cooperation between communist parties was central to the communist system. Their efforts in economic policy, ideology, and the strengthening of defense were closely coordinated. Point seven, other summits were held independently of either Comecon or Warsaw Pact organizations, for example. One was held in Moscow in June 1967 and another in Budapest in the following month. These two meetings discussed the Israeli-Arab War, expressed solidarity with the Arab world, and demanded the withdrawal of Israeli troops. As the encyclopedia puts it, these meetings provided an opportunity to work out a single position and joint political and diplomatic actions. Two summits were held on international ideological questions, one in Moscow, December 1973, and one in Prague, March 1975. They discussed the direction that should be taken by ideological cooperation in conditions of deepening détente. 8. The political and military leaders of the Warsaw Pact countries met in Warsaw in May 1980. In addition to formal summit meetings, a series of informal summer gatherings of communist leaders have been held in the Crimea. References can be found to such meetings in 1971, 1972, 1973, 1976, 1977, and 1978, and probably to one held in 1974. As the Encyclopedia for 1974 states, the Crimean meetings have become a tradition. The leaders keep each other informed and narrow down their positions in the political, economic, and ideological fields. 9. In 1975, the Encyclopedia said that the meetings had become the forum at which the international situation is assessed, common tasks are discussed, and the strategy of joint actions is developed. Thanks to the Crimean meetings, the cooperation between communist countries has become closer. According to Pravda, March 20, 1981, it was noted at the 26th CPSU Congress that, during the past years, 37 friendly meetings at the summit level had taken place in the Crimea. The future development of relations between the fraternal parties and countries, key problems of world politics, and tasks for the future were discussed at these meetings. A second new type of high-level gathering made its appearance in the 1970s. In September-October 1975 and January 1976. And in March 1977, there were conferences of the second secretaries of the Central Committees held in Moscow, Warsaw, and Sofia respectively. Deputy heads of government were included in the first of these conferences, which dealt with economic cooperation. Point 11. The second and third both dealt with ideological questions in a period of détente. The Warsaw meeting related to Europe in particular. Point 12. Cuba, as well as Romania and Czechoslovakia, was mentioned as being represented at the Warsaw and Sofia meetings. One meeting of the Warsaw Pact Political Consultative Committee that does not appear to have been held at first or second secretary level is nevertheless worthy of note. It took place in Bucharest, the capital of supposedly independent Romania, in November 1976. Its agenda covered the deepening political and military cooperation between members of the pact. In order to perfect the mechanism of political cooperation within the framework of the Warsaw Pact, a committee of ministers of foreign affairs, together with a combined secretariat, was established as an organ of the Political Consultative Committee. Coordination through diplomatic channels. With the adoption of the long-range policy, diplomatic representation within the bloc became a permanent form of political coordination among its members. This statement is supported by the fact that an unusually large number of new ambassadors were appointed between bloc countries in the period 1960-62. New Soviet ambassadors were appointed in 1960 to Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, Cuba, and Hungary, in 1961 to Mongolia, Romania, Yugoslavia, and Albania, in 1962 to Cuba, Yugoslavia, and East Germany. The Romanians, Hungarians, Mongolians, and Cubans appointed new ambassadors to the Soviet Union in 1960, the Yugoslavs in 1961, the Chinese in 1962, and the Czechoslovaks in 1963. The status of Soviet ambassadors changed at the same time. There are indications 14 that Soviet ambassadors to other bloc countries were made responsible for coordinating all aspects of long-range policy within the countries of their accreditation. Soviet ambassadors are carefully chosen so as to ensure that their background and experience fit them for the specific tasks they will have to perform. Because of their coordinating function, almost all Soviet ambassadors within the bloc since 1960 have been members of the Central Committee of the CPSU. In this context, it is worth remembering Tito's complaint in 1948 that the Yugoslavs could not be expected to reveal secret party information to Soviet representatives who did not have that status. It is also interesting to note that no distinction seems to be made between the status of Soviet ambassadors in dissenting bloc countries, such as China and Romania, and Orthodox countries, such as Hungary and Bulgaria. For example, the Soviet ambassador to Romania from 1965 to 1971 was Basov, a Central Committee member. The Soviet press indicated in July 1966 that he was a member of the Soviet delegation to the Comecon meeting in Bucharest. The delegation included Brezhnev and Kosygin. Of special interest are the Soviet ambassadors to China. From 1959 to 1965, the post was held by Chervenenko. It is noteworthy that Chervenenko, who was appointed in the period in which China was actively participating in the formulation of the long-range policy, should have been kept in Peking for the first 5 years of the split. It is even more remarkable in the light of his background. From 1951 onward, he was a senior party theoretician and official in the Ukraine. From 1956 to 1959, he was secretary of the Central Committee of the Ukrainian Party. As such, he was a close friend and confidant of Khrushchev. He went to Peking and remained there as a leading political and party figure, not as a career diplomat. His posting indicated the close political and party relations between the Soviet Union and China. His subsequent career is of equal interest. In 1965, he was transferred from Peking to Prague, where he remained until 1973, a period spanning both the preparation for and the aftermath of the Prague Spring. In 1973, he moved to Paris, in time for the development of Eurocommunism and other elements of the Bloc's strategy for Europe. He has been awarded two Orders of Lenin. In Peking, he was succeeded by Lapin, who served there from 1965 to 1970. Lapin was elected a member of the Central Committee at the 23rd CPSU Congress in 1966. As chief editor of broadcasts from 1944 to 1953, he became an expert on the censorship and manipulation of news. He went on to become Minister of Foreign Affairs for the Russian Republic from 1960 to 1962 and deputy to Gromyko from 1962 to 1965.15 Lapin's successor was Tolstikov, a prominent party official. From 1952 onward, he was active in party work in Leningrad and rose to be first secretary of the Leningrad Provincial Committee, one of the most important party posts in the Soviet Union, and one once held by Zhdanov. Tolstikov has been a member of the CPSU Central Committee since 1961. Sherbakov, who took over from Tolstikov in Peking in 1978, worked in the Central Committee apparatus from 1949 to 1963 and from 1974 to 1978. He has been a member of the Central Revision Committee of the CPSU since 1966. He was minister at the Soviet Embassy in Peking in 1963-64, crucial years in the development of the Sino-Soviet split. From 1964 to 1974, he was Soviet ambassador to Vietnam. The successive postings to China of these four very senior Soviet party officials is incompatible with the deterioration in Sino-Soviet party relations that is alleged to have taken place. The continuity of Soviet and Chinese foreign policy is further symbolized by the continuance in office as the ministers of foreign affairs in their respective countries of Gromyko from 1957 to the present day and of Chin'e from 1958 to 1971. Bilateral coordination within the bloc. Even if bilateral coordination is considered a less perfect form of coordination within the communist world than multilateral, it is still officially recognized. There is abundant, openly available evidence of the continuity from 1958 to the present day of bilateral exchanges of visits between party and government leaders of the Soviet Union and other communist countries, including China, Romania, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, and Cuba, countries which, at one time or another, have allegedly been estranged to some degree from the Soviets. 16 for the duration of the genuine Tito-Stalin split. It would have been more than Tito's life was worth for him to have attempted to visit the Soviet Union, but since 1961, Tito, until his death, and other Yugoslav leaders have been almost annual visitors. Khrushchev, Brezhnev, Kosygin, and Gromyko in their turn have been to Yugoslavia. Tito and his subordinates have traveled often to other communist countries, including, from 1970 on, China. Tito's death did not destroy the pattern. In April 1982, Gromyko visited Yugoslavia and the Yugoslav defense minister visited Moscow despite alleged differences over Afghanistan and Poland. In the case of Romania, some of Ceausescu's many visits to the Soviet Union have been well publicized. Western commentators, under the influence of disinformation, have almost always assumed that these visits were made in an attempt to resolve the differences between the Soviet and Romanian leaders. But the evidence of Romania's participation in Warsaw Pact, Comecon, Crimean, and other multilateral and bilateral meetings within the bloc far outweighs the occasional evidence of her non-participation and is inconsistent with the existence of serious differences. It points to the conclusion that, when Ceausescu met Brezhnev, it was not to be reprimanded by him, but to work out in practical terms how the fiction of Romanian independence could best be maintained and exploited in the interests of long-range policy. Similarly, the scale of the evidence of Czechoslovak contact with the Soviet Union, bilaterally and multilaterally, in summit, Warsaw Pact, and Comecon meetings before, during, and after the events of 1968 supports the conclusion that the Czechoslovak crisis was a planned and coordinated operation. For example, in March 1968, Czechoslovak representatives informed a summit meeting of several bloc countries in Dresden, called to discuss political and economic unity through Comecon and bilateral contacts, that the decisions of the January plenum were aimed at the realization of the line of the 13th Party Congress, and that they were sure that the leadership of the party would secure the further development of socialism. 17 Chinese party and government leaders played an important part in the formulation of the long-range policy from 1958 to 1960. As observers, they attended Comecon meetings until late in 1961, and also attended the early meetings of the Political Consultative Committee of the Warsaw Pact. 18. It was at these meetings that the foundations of future coordination in the bloc were laid. Even in 1961, continued Chinese participation in multilateral gatherings of this kind was an anomaly. For them to have continued to attend such gatherings would have put the Sino-Soviet disinformation operation at serious risk. Less conspicuous bilateral Sino-Soviet contacts of one kind or another have continued almost without interruption throughout the split. They are capable of two interpretations. For example, conventional methodology sees the meetings of the Sino-Soviet Border Commission as vain attempts to resolve frontier dispute. The new methodology sees them as providing convenient cover for coordinating policy and planning, for staging and exploiting spurious frontier incidents, and for other forms of Sino-Soviet squabbling. The same point applies to the Joint Sino-Soviet Commission on Navigation. The exchanges of trade delegations could equally provide cover for contacts of a political nature. Suggestive scraps of information can be gleaned from the Great Soviet Encyclopedia. For example, in April 1961, a Chinese trade delegation to Moscow was received by Khrushchev. In 1962, Chinese party delegations attended party congresses in Eastern Europe. In January 1963, a delegation from the Supreme Soviet, led by Andropov, at that time the secretary of the Central Committee responsible for bloc countries, visited China. From July 5 to July 20, 1963, there were meetings in Moscow between the leading strategists of the CPSU and CPC. The Chinese delegation was led by the General Secretary, Teng Xiaoping, and the CPSU delegation included Suslov, V. Grishin, Andropov, Ilyichev, Ponomarev, Satyukov, and Chervenenko. The Chinese delegation was received by the CPSU Central Committee. The presence in Moscow of the Chinese delegation coincided with the negotiation of the Test Ban Treaty. The meetings between the delegations were interrupted, but there was an agreement that they should be resumed later. In October 1964, there was a meeting of the Sino-Soviet Railway Commission in Khabarovsk. In the same month, Soviet, Romanian, Cuban, and other delegations attended the celebrations of the Chinese Revolution. The Soviet delegation was led by V. Grishin, candidate member of the Presidium and chairman of the Soviet Trade Union Organization. From November 5 to November 14, 1964, a party and government delegation led by Chou Enlai was in the Soviet Union. It had meetings with Brezhnev, Andropov, Kosygin, Podgorny, Gromyko, and others, and signed an agreement. 21. The reference to Gromyko's presence indicates that the meeting dealt with the coordination of foreign policy. On February 5 to 6 and 10 to 11, 1965, a Soviet delegation led by Kosygin stopped over in China on its way to and from Vietnam for negotiations with Chinese leaders, including Mao. On January 7 and 13 to 14, 1966, Shelepin visited China on the way to and from Vietnam. It may or may not be a coincidence that Brezhnev was in Mongolia from January 11 to January 17. In June 1966, Chou Enlai visited Albania and led a delegation to Romania for talks with the Romanian leaders. From June 19 to August 8, 1969, the Sino-Soviet Joint Commission on Navigation in the Amur Basin held its 15th session and reached an agreement. No dates were given for the first 14 sessions. In September 1969, Romanian leaders visited Peking. On September 11, Kosygin met Chou Enlai in Peking. On October 20, Sino-Soviet negotiations took place in Peking on problems of mutual interest. The Soviet delegation was led by the first Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, V. Kuznetsov. Kuznetsov remained in China until June 13, 1970. On August 15, 1970, the Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs, L. Elichev, arrived in Peking as head of a Soviet government delegation for negotiations with the Chinese. Between July and December 1976, Sino-Soviet negotiating sessions were held on the settlement of border questions. In August and September 1970, negotiations on Sino-Soviet border trade were held in Khabarovsk. On November 18, 1970, the new Soviet ambassador, Tolstikov, had a meeting with Chou Enlai. In 1971, the negotiations on border questions continued. From June to August, a Chinese deputy minister was in the Soviet Union as head of a trade delegation negotiating deliveries. A trade agreement was signed in Moscow. In 1972, the Sino-Soviet negotiations on border questions did not advance because of China's negative position. In June, a Soviet trade delegation led by I. Grishin visited China. In 1973, negotiations on border questions continued at the deputy minister of foreign affairs level. In February and March, a session of the Joint Sino-Soviet Commission was held. In 1974, the negotiations on border questions by the deputy ministers of foreign affairs continued. In February 1974, direct flights from Moscow to China were started. In February-March 1974, a session of the Joint Sino-Soviet Commission on Navigation was held. On June 25, 1974, a Soviet delegation led by Deputy Minister I. Elichev arrived in China for negotiations on border questions. On November 12, 1975, Deputy Minister I. Elichev arrived in Peking for negotiations on border questions. In September 1976, the CPCU Central Committee sent its condolences on Mao's death. Gromyko and Mazurov, both members of the Politburo, called at the Chinese embassy. On November 29, 1976, Deputy Minister I. Elichev arrived in China. Negotiations on border questions continued in Peking until February 1977. From July to October 1977, the Joint Sino-Soviet Mixed Commission on Navigation resumed its sessions after a two-year interruption. On July 20 to 28, 1977, a Chinese government trade delegation, led by the Deputy Minister of Foreign Trade, visited the Soviet Union and was received by Patalishev. In April 1978, I. Elichev arrived in Peking to resume negotiations. Talks were held in Moscow from September 29 to November 30, 1979, between I. Elichev and the Chinese Deputy Foreign Minister, Wang Yuping. They were to take up broad questions of political and economic relations, other than border disputes. According to TASS, it was agreed that the talks should continue in Peking. Gromyko met Wang in December. Early in 1981, China and the Soviet Union renewed an accord on navigation rights in the Amur River. This was at the 23rd session of a series of negotiations begun in 1951. In March 1982, three Chinese experts visited Moscow to study Soviet management techniques and were received by the deputy chairman of the Soviet State Planning Committee. This list of bilateral contacts is obviously incomplete. Even so, no comparable list of bilateral Soviet-Yugoslav contacts could be drawn up for the period of the genuine Tito-Stalin split. For a substantial fraction of the period covered, the Soviet Union was represented in China by a deputy minister as well as by a leading party official in the post of ambassador. Fragmentary as it is, the picture that emerges of Sino-Soviet bilateral contacts is more consistent with coordination of policy and tactics than with abortive attempts to settle disputes. Special attention should be drawn to the prominence, In the talks with the Chinese, of two major Soviet strategists, Kuznetsov, a leading specialist in foreign policy, and Ilyichev, a specialist in ideology as well as foreign affairs, including European security. 36. Note also the presence of Andropov, a specialist on the bloc, later chairman of the KGB, and now party leader. Tikhvinsky, an expert on disinformation, has figured in the Soviet delegations. On the Chinese side, prominent officials of the Chinese Foreign Ministry also took part in these discussions, which suggests that the subjects involved were wider than border problems. The number of trade delegations sent by the Chinese to the Soviet Union is also striking. It is noticeable that those in 1971, 1973, and 1977 arrived in the Soviet Union in July or August, which is the time when the Crimean Summit conferences are held. The possibility of secret Chinese participation in them should not be discounted. A similar pattern of high-level bilateral contacts between the Soviets and the Vietnamese and between the Chinese and the Vietnamese could also be documented. Before leaving the subject of coordination within the bloc, brief reference should be made to the close working relations between specialist departments of the central committees of the bloc parties. Intensive contacts are also carried on between administrative, international, ideological, and other departments within the bloc, and outside it in the case of those non-bloc parties large enough to have similar departments of their own. Coordination between bloc and non-bloc parties. The arrangements for coordinating the bloc and non-bloc parties and achieving what Khrushchev called the synchronization of their activities and policies are so extensive that no more than an outline can be given here. Of fundamental importance are the international conferences of bloc and non-bloc parties. The 64-party Congress of November 1957 decided to work out a new long-range policy and strategy for the bloc and for the international communist movement. The 81-party Congress of November 1960 formally adopted the new policy and strategy. The Chinese, Albanian, Romanian, Czechoslovak, French, Italian, and Spanish parties all took part in it. The next such Congress was held in Moscow in June 1969. 75 parties attended, 9 from within the bloc and 66 from outside it. The presence of 5 members of the Soviet Politburo shows the importance attached to it by the CPSU. The Congress reviewed the preceding 10 years and adopted a program of action for the future. The French, Italian, and Spanish parties took part. The preparations for the 1969 conference extended over more than 4 years. In the same period, other international conferences were devoted to specific aspects of policy. For example, in October 1965, conferences were held both in Moscow and in Czechoslovakia, Prague, to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the 7th Congress of the Comintern, which adopted united front tactics. Representatives of 40 parties attended the Moscow meeting, which produced a report on the historic significance of the 7th Congress of the Comintern for the modern communist movement. According to the Great Soviet Encyclopedia, New Strategic and Tactical Forms and Methods. For the communist movement were formulated. 38 in January 1970, a conference in Moscow of 28 European parties discussed European security. In September, in Budapest, 45 parties discussed common actions against imperialism. 39 There have been systematic regional conferences of communist parties in Western Europe, Scandinavia, Latin America, Central America, the Mediterranean, and in Arab and African countries. The series in Europe included the Tihany and Berlin conferences in 1976, in which the Euro-Communist parties were active. The list of conferences could be prolonged indefinitely. The congresses of the CPSU provide important opportunities for consultation and coordination. The congresses of other bloc communist parties attract fraternal delegations in substantial numbers. It would be superfluous to enumerate them all. A few examples will illustrate the point. The 12th Czechoslovak Congress, in 1962, was attended by 68 delegations, the 8th Yugoslav Congress, in 1964, by 30, the Romanian Congress, in 1965, by 57. Wherever conditions permit, the congresses of non-bloc communist parties are attended by delegations from bloc parties. There are innumerable official and unofficial contacts between communist parties and national and international communist front organizations, such as the World Federation of Trade Unions and the World Peace Council. Permanent linkage between the bloc and non-bloc parties exists through the International Department of the CPSU Central Committee under Ponomarev. This department has representatives stationed abroad. And through the headquarters of the World Marxist Review in Prague, where a number of representatives of Bloc and non-Bloc parties work together as permanent members of the staff. The World Marxist Review holds theoretical conferences on major policy issues. Huge numbers of bilateral visits are paid to the Soviet Union and other communist countries every year by the leaders and functionaries of non-Bloc communist parties traveling on party business. Conclusions. Between 1958 and 1980, the scale of contact between communist parties inside and outside the Bloc is without parallel elsewhere in the world. The vast majority of communist gatherings take place behind closed doors. No more is known about them than the leaders wish to be known. Deprived of authentic news and hypnotized by revelations about communist disunity derived from communist sources, Western commentators have tended to underrate or ignore the vast weight of the evidence of continuing systematic coordination of the Bloc from 1958 to the present day. The scale, the scope, and the manner in which this coordination is conducted refute the notion that international communism is a movement that has lost its momentum, direction, and ideological sense of purpose through disunity. Furthermore, the movement has not lost its controlled, organized, and disciplined character. True, systematic dissent on the part of any one communist country could only lead to its expulsion from the communist bloc and its ostracism by all other communist countries, as was the case with Yugoslavia in 1948. What has changed since 1957-60 is not the nature of communism, but the appreciation by communist leaders of the strategic and tactical advantages of spurious dissent within the movement and the experience they have gained in exploiting it strategically in the interest of long-range policy. The old methodology resolves the contradiction between the evidence of coordination and the evidence of disunity by ignoring much of the evidence of coordination. The new methodology resolves it by demonstrating the contrived and spurious nature of the disunity. The scale of the acknowledged contact between the Soviets and the Chinese, the Yugoslavs, the Romanians, and the Eurocommunists betrays the nature of the splits and differences between them and confirms that they are no more than manifestations of strategic disinformation in action in support of long-range policy.